And how coldly I laughed and scorned my own thoughts and feelings and drove these vague impulses from me like some troubled dream. But I had just as soon tried to stay myself from her bedside as a piece of steel from a magnet, for she drew me, and I at last scarcely left her, only to go at a sterner command of duty calling, ever calling. At last this little starveling spoke and ate nourishing food, and was propped up on the pillows and told me that she was begging for food, when the great wheeled van struck her, and broke both her legs and she was brought to St. Mary's. She told me that she had had nothing to eat for almost 3 days when she was hurt. At her words, a great swelling something rose up in me, and I feared for myself, for I was angry at the cruelty of starvation, and I then wanted to go out and feed all the hungry. But with a mighty effort I again laughed at my insane weakness and settled down into a hospital nurse again, stayed myself down into that same wordless, stony-hearted, miserable creature that the people of the world call kind and noble, but alas, they do not know. Once I asked this little creature her name and age, and she said, "Age is nothing to me, I don't know what age is, and my name is Happy, just plain Happy, least that's what they call me everywhere." At last I knew that she had come out of the filth of the dirty streets where naught lives but treachery and wickedness and wrong. I was indeed a foolish woman to listen for a moment to any such a story. Once when I had gone out and left her sleeping, I heard a feeble cry, and returning quickly I saw her with outstretched arms and half-raised body muttering something, with her gaunt roaming eyes fixed, in rapt awe on the ceiling. Not understanding, I asked her what she was doing. "Begging," she answered, "when us hungry I does that to him, and then I goes out and begs of them as I see in the streets, but now am I ain't hungry, but I's beggin' to be took away so's I won't be hungry no more." And this was prayer. Ah, so long, my heart had forgotten. I cannot tell you with what a new and rapt inspiration I began life after this little foundling had taught me once more just how to pray. When she was dying I stood close over her with all the old sophistries and cynicism gone forever, for now that I had entered new existence I was rising constantly above the mean conventionalities of the mundane sphere and living in close communication with other forces that I, as yet, realized little of. When, as I tell you, the experience of this little waif dying in my care as she raised those great sad, roaming eyes upward, searching the walls and ceiling for some familiar thing, I watched her intently and asked her what it was she wished. She told me that she saw the dazzling whiteness of many forms and faces of smiling peace and happiness, and that they were calling her incessantly to come to them. Gazing, I wondered, and looking into the perfect quietude of the concentration of death, I heard strange sweet whispers float over my waiting and astonished ear. They spoke of peace and eternal blessing. And like a flash of inner hearing I knew that I would live after death, for these were only disembodied spirits that spoke to me, and that were showing themselves so radiantly happy to little Happy of the streets. A great joy swelled within my soul, and as my little world sick so long the bed, left the body and soared away, I looked long and intently, and to my absolute astonishment I saw her, her real self arisen and moving upward in the arms of some mighty one and carried out of my astounded sight. It is needless to say that I sent up a strong prayer of supplication, of pleading that I might be forgiven and deserve the happiness that possessed me. Daily I grew, but with another growth, a soul awakening, whereas I had been passing through a spiritual death. But little Happy, that strange, pathetic little bundle of rags, had given me a new birth, and I began to feel the breathing of the soul growing into new thoughts, pure and wholesome, and which drove away all the old materialistic and sordid desires. I soon began to see people's souls as well as their outer covering, and I was astonished at my power of second sight, as I called it. And now all the ties and obligations of the old life seemed mean and ignoble, and when I saw once and for all that the greater portion of the so-called physicians were not attending on an high and holy mission of actual relief to the sick, but that their daily lives and acts of medical practice were actuated almost alone on the principles of charlatanism, lying and trickery, I was really appalled. You see, I had begun to see with the eyes of the soul, to feel within the inner depths, and now I could no longer blindly go headlong into the future and aid in carrying out the plans of these most wily, unprincipled men, for indeed they were most falsely preying upon an innocent public, and have always, and are doing so today. God pity them when they enter the boundaries of this beautiful world, for those of whom they have shed innocent blood, through needless and misapplied surgery, will rise up before them in mighty armies and mock them unceasingly. Those of whom it has been said in your world, "Oh yes, the operation was very successful, but well, the patient was too weak to rally." So it would seem that the life of the patient was held in but small esteem, but the operation was the most important thing to be considered, and if that was successfully accomplished, then the patient might die or live, a matter of little consequence in either case. So when I received my new sight, I went to the superintendent and told him my intention of giving up my position of nursing the sick and suffering at large, on my own account, and in the run of our conversation I told him why. Told him that I could no longer aid the nefarious work of the cruel men of that institution, and he informed me that I might go in 2 weeks hence. Alas! Could I have seen? I went to my room shortly after and retired for the night, but was awakened from my first sleep by two masculine voices, holding low converse close to the foot of my bed. Then I heard footsteps, and an unspeakable horror seized me. Before I could struggle or call out, strong arms lifted me and pinioned me tight, while deft fingers threw a white cloth saturated with some sickening, deadly drug over my face, and I could not choose but breathe the deathly poison into my lungs. And this was the last I remembered of mortal life, and I awoke at last as if from a deep sleep, and stood alive and with a new sense of life, gazing on the pale coldness of my corpse on the bed, in the light of the grey winter morning. And lo, as I stood there these two, my murderers, came creeping in, and taking a bottle of poison, stealthily placed it into the stiffening and nerveless fingers of my lifeless body. I recognized then immediately, one as the assistant hospital physician and the other as the head of the institution. The dead do not tell tales, they whispered as they stole out, only that little vial in her hand will be accountable for the loss of Mrs. Strong. With the awful sorrow of one looking on a doomed soul did my spirit eyes follow those men as they left my room and went their way, nor did the walls between us hide them, for spirits can read the acts of men through the darkness and solidity of walls or other material obstructions. They turned my body and I witnessed the dreary service to the end, and then appeared in the papers the account of another unhappy woman, a hospital nurse, who committed suicide by swallowing poison. For a long, long period of time, possibly years of earthly reckoning, I was bound to earth by the terrible cause of my passing. But gradually I tore myself away from those low vibrations and rose into realms ethereal with those of the happier and the eternally blessed. And now I come and give my blessing unto this circle forever, confidence and faith in humanity. Dr. Reed, of all the influences that contribute to the progress of mankind, faith and confidence in humanity are the greatest. But the fine economy of the spirit nature that you need to believe in, is necessary to know man, in order to bring out all the elements in his soul. The crimes of all great criminals or impostors are in consequence of the violence done to man's faith in man. They reach beyond the confines of the human problem of faith, and like the problem of love, they are open to question. If man does not believe in his brother whom he has seen, how can he believe in a God whom he never seen? It is certain, however, that the great souls who show men the potentialities of greatness within them, are not confined to any conventional type, order or rank in whose society and religion one may seek to locate them. So often, in fact, does this spring from such adverse and unlooked for quarters, that a broad faith in humanity and a readiness to greet nature anywhere, and look for it everywhere, is the proper attitude for men in relation to each other. The image of man may be buried, but the soul, the ego is never buried. In things material, in things intellectual, in things spiritual, faith is the power that buoys men up and makes them float on life's ocean. It requires no body of divinity, nor wisdom nor foolishness of preaching to convince man of the truth of this principle in human life. It is not only that the lives of great men remind you that you may make your life sublime, but the lives of the happy reveal to you often secrets of peace and blessedness lying close to all hearts. Happiness in any human form should appeal to you, as still within your own power. The pleasure in another's success, besides the noble and unselfish character commonly attributed to it, carries ever some hidden thought that what one man can do, another can. The attainment of the highest means for the possibility of it is for all. All the world loves a lover, because the possibility of purest joy to all creatures stands revealed in him. Even lovers have scarcely a right to hide their joy when so many aching hearts are wondering if earth can ever offer it. Perhaps nature were wise to make some blind, that others may see their bliss in spite of them. It is those who betray love and trust that should hunt the shadows, rather than leave seeking soul faith in human nature. And what does it signify for a medium or a psychic whose mission should be to lift men out of their sins, not chain them to earth? It is not the mediums or psychics who leave their followers in dungeons of despair or caves of darkness by pursuing human selfishness and cowardice through all its designs without a single regard for the law of justice, which requires a recognition of virtue, as well as of faults, in the purest subject. When man takes it upon himself to reveal the faults of others, he is in honor bound to place in truthful record the good that man has done. This true service, which is performed not for one, but for all men, would shower a blessing upon those who could follow in his path. And as for blaming nature for not making more of these encouraging examples, it is as little and as guileless as childhood that handles the problem. When the child replied to her mother's demand that she asked God to make her a good girl, "Oh mother, don't let us bother God about that, that's your lookout." If man cannot discern and help preserve in his brother the goodness that nature has put into him, it is of no use to bother nature about it, for it is fair and pious to assume that the all-wise intelligence has done the best possible with the material at hand, without any dictation or solicitation from man. The noble souls that once lived and believed in it have never failed to find the nobleness that lies in others. The spirit world in which your early writers and sages are walking and wrought their immortal works, was due to their sublime faith in each other. Spiritualism is the philosophy of life upon which you proceed. The trouble is that you all seek to be professional philosophers, and you refuse to take a step in any way of living until you have even analyzed and coordinated all the dust and pebbles on your way. Friends, what you need is a religion to live by rather than one to write books about. Is it not possible that you might see spiritualism as a philosophy complete in all its parts, yet giving a sufficient motive and program for the present? May you believe in goodness, truth and love, and strive after the unselfish life, and seek to do good even though you do not feel fully qualified to frame the final word? If you could only turn for a few hours from your childish attempts to describe down to the last iota how the finest of atom stardust operates in the universe, if you could let your theologies rest in the hands of the professional investigators and take a few of the simple, elemental facts of life and work them out for yourselves, then you would have a new plan of living for all. Your world would be a cold, desolate world if you never needed one another, if there were no drafts on sympathy, pity, tenderness and help. Your fair blossoms would soon perish, the godlike in you could never be but for your human needs, your weakness and your cares like dull slaves you would be inert under your own burdens but for the call of another's need bidding you arise and walk. Did you ever look into the faces of those you met on the streets? In some you would find depth, of joy, light and cheer, but never for those who only care for their own needs. You can learn the secret of living thee, which is to share life, and the secret of lightening your loads, which is to bear the burden of others. Never say to yourself, "I have no strength to spare." Live for the life of all, and you shall find life worth living. According to these teachings, there are degrees of a certain advanced spiritual state, a more or less perfect and healthy condition of the human soul. A man can advance in the degree that is natural, Hereditary and selfish proclivities are brought into subjection and due subordination to the higher and truly human faculties, and the divine will and love are so enthroned within him that he finds his delight in learning and doing good to others. So, my friends, the higher his wisdom and the purer his love, the more closely he is conjoined to nature's laws, so much the more orderly and healthy is his soul, and so much more blissful his state, and in so much higher degree. This state is not one to be instantaneously or suddenly attained. It is reached only through long and brave conflict with the selfish propensities of the soul. It is a state that one grows into gradually, as you grow from infancy to manhood, from a state of ignorance to one of intelligence. The means by which this state is reached, or achieved, are the natural and spiritual truths that you learn, your trials and disappointments, your joys and sorrows, successes and defeats, your relations and intercourse with others and all the varied discipline of life. So live that you shall receive into your hearts the good of that unselfish love which is the substance and body of these truths. My spirit home. Your sister Barbara. I have sojourned in this beautiful world of light for a great number of earthly years, yet to me this space of time seems only as the passing of a moment. We keep no account of time here, and our lives are controlled by our desires and earnest wishes. Each and everything that we have here is made from the fixing or concentration of our own thoughts, and these thoughts are the blossoms and fruitage of our souls. I help to build my spirit home in this same manner, and so it is that spirits have nothing here only what they themselves build, or help to build by the power of concentrated thought. I write this more for the benefit of those who do not know how to lay up treasures in heaven. When I first commenced to help build my spirit home, and it started to grow before my eyes, the rooms and furnishings were not as I had expected them to be, and as I was very much disappointed, I asked other spirit builders what the trouble was, and they answered, "You have directed your thoughts awry, in wishing for the perfection of your spiritual abode. You have become positive in your desires, and this very over-positive element breaks the wave vibration before it is potent to do its work. Uneven, steady and roundly earnest adaptation of desire brings about a better result." This I soon learned, and almost before I could fully realize the result, it was accomplished before me. My home is very beautiful, being made of brown marble flecked with white, and fashioned and set together so as to relieve and please the eye. Inside my dwelling the floors are covered with patterns and petals, and the walls and ceilings are profuse with blossoms of every description. As my sister on earth knows, I was very fond of flowers while I lived in the mortal. The rooms have no partitions, but just veil-like hangings and soft-hued draperies, distinguishing one room from another. I am very happy and awaiting the meeting of my loved ones still on earth. With loving remembrance I dedicate this to my sister and brother, Lizzie Butler and Edward Butler of Memphis, Mo. Labor and Desires in Spirit Life. Miss Janet Abba. There are lovely views to be had in the spirit world. We have the beautiful and the sublime, the romantic and the picturesque. We have grand forests, moss-covered rocks, towering mountains, lovely hills and valleys, dashing cascades and beautiful, meandering streams. Here we have all of the beauties of nature and art combined. There is the palatial mansion, with its corresponding surroundings, its grassy lawns, its beautiful and fragrant flowers, its terraced slopes, its sparkling fountains, its ornamental statuary, its scaly plumaged birds, in short, everything to please the eye. But all of this is only a faint emblem of the spirit world. There is the city whose walls are of jasper and gold, her buildings clear as crystal, her fountains, all manner of precious stones, and the gates of pearl. The inhabitants are clothed in white robes. We walk by thought. Night never shuts out our sight, for there is no night. But our sight is perfect, and our views wide, extensive, illimitable. Our employments here are not laborious. Our employment in the spirit world consists in doing good and the study of character and conversation with those in the higher and lower spheres of spirit life, and in offices of mutual kindness and love. but those in dark conditions will be left behind for a time and when reached again will be spiritualized and made like those in the higher spheres of spiritual existence. There is no scarcity here. It is a land of abundance. No famine can ever reach us. Here poverty is unknown. Here none has ever felt, or ever will feel the pangs of hunger or the pains of thirst. Here, every want is supplied, every desire gratified. There is nothing certain in your uncertain world. The brightest flowers fade, the clearest friends part. Wealth makes to itself wings and flies away. Here there is a feeling of perfect security and consequently a perfect satisfaction and peace. It is no wonder, therefore, that some who are wise and good spiritualists desire this country, and that sometimes they even languish and sigh to be here. It would be absurd to desire something that is unattainable, and that has no existence. We do not wish to raise your hopes, or excite desires, which we do not intend to gratify. The spiritualists know there is a better world than the one you dwell in. They have it by the testimony of those who have crossed the great divide. If a man truly and earnestly desires to go to some country in your world, which he considered better than his native land, he would take steps to gratify this desire. In other words, he will make arrangements to go, and will start on his journey. To the unbeliever, let me say, live no longer in the indulgence of worldly things, pursue no longer the blind faith of ignorance, but seek the joys that never fade. You are going to your long home, someday. You are traveling to the grave. Will you not turn your feet to us and journey to the better land? The awakening after death. Stephen Terhune. To live and experience the mortal is one experience, but to live and awaken to immortality is quite another and a more beauteous life than I can tell you. There are not words within the mortal ken that could describe to you one half the glories of spirit life. When I lived in the mortal, I was a minister of the creeds, I taught in the creeds, I believed in the creeds, and yet I can now in retrospect look back over all that time, and see that spirits inspired me to speak, and that at times, I got so far away from my creedish doctrines in sermonizing, that my congregation wandered, but believed because it came from the lips of their preacher. But some among them realized the inspiration I possessed. Since I have entered spirit life and come into the great halls of learning and inspiration, I have found out how to teach in the true spirit, and how to live in the constant vibration of right principle. The awakening after death is a glorious unfoldment of the spirit, a gradual development of the soul, and a full realization of the greatest and most expansive happiness that your brightest hopes can imagine. I go now on my curious missions to higher and lower realms accompanied by my sweet wife and soulmate Mary F. Terhune. This little message I dedicate to my earthly children, and leave my wish that men would learn to trust and love each other more. Yours in the interests of the Star Circle. Signed by Stephen Terhune. Next is, sincerity. Catherine Silhas. In all things I have learned the value of being sincere. The spirits who by many valuable lessons have reached the heights in this wonderful world have had as a first lesson, sincerity. We are taught here to be sincere in all things. I will tell you why. An insincere thought sends out a cross vibration, and no one can progress sustained on these cross vibrations. For the spiritual environments are builded entirely on the vibration of concentrated thought, and if this thought emanates from an untrue or impure source, then the finished result is a picture, an object of chaos. I left the earth life when I was yet early in years, and my dear husband mourned my departure, but I am happy here, my daughter and I, awaiting my husband's and her father's coming. I have erected a beautiful home here in the sincerity of my thought, and in it we dwell in peace and happiness, awaiting the meeting of our loved ones here in this world of light. The breeze of heaven is the breath of sincerity. The light of the eternal city is the essence of truth, and the glory of our life and dwelling is the handiwork of the eternal spirit which holdeth and giveth all things. With my earnest love I dedicate this to my dear husband, Edwin J. Silhas. Transition. Lizzie Griff. When I went to sleep in the physical world, it was after a long and hard struggle for mortal breath and life, and a terrible time of untold suffering for me. I tried so hard to live for my husband's and my family's sake, to live in their world, to help care for, and love them all together. But I failed, and failing, I was very sad in leaving Earth, though no one knew. I passed out with the one thought that I was leaving behind all that was dear to me, as one goes on a long and unknown strange journey and knows not if he shall ever see the faces of his loved again. This will seem so strange to those who know that I was raised in the environment of a strong Christian faith, and that I also believed with all my soul in another life. Yet when you go to enter that life with only this belief, then and only then, will you understand. When at last, I had parted from earth and stood like a timid, frightened child on the strange but beauteous shores of the eternal, and saw many loved ones gone before, come with outstretched arms to meet me, my fear died and gladness overpowered me with such joy as mortals reek not of. When my joys became so manifest in my newly found home, they told me that I might return to earth and see once more my sorrowing husband, and I came to him and tried to comfort a grief that was so deep and lasting that it will never cease entirely until we are together over here. For he was grieving for the other half of his own soul, although neither of us at this time were aware of this great truth. But gradually I came closer and closer to him until I impressed him to come to this medium through whose powers I am at present manifesting. And when he did come and stand before the cabinet, I came and placed my hand upon his shoulder as of old, and as we stood face to face, I told him that I was not dead but had gone away for a little while to prepare a home for him in heaven, and that truth saved him and saved me. I have come many times since and will continue to come until he comes to me over here, and then he will know how little a thing transition really is, but how much, how very much is the immortal awakening. Then we too shall travel the spheres hand in hand like two happy children, and live forever in the abiding place I have prepared for him. With grateful wishes to all my earthly and spirit friends, with love to my every relative and to my doubly dear children still on earth, I will consign this to my dearest husband, with my unchanging devotion. The bond of family love. Lydia N. Annaba. When mortal families are united in the strongest of all bonds on earth, that of a pure family devotion, it is then that when one link drops from this eternal chain, that there is grief in the mortal dwelling at this time of so-called death. But what is death to mortal reckoning is but life to spiritual understanding. For behold, all things shall be made new. There shall be a new heaven and a new earth, and all that in them is. And this shall be done by the unchangeable law of concentration. Then if there be a new heaven and a new earth as it were, then why should not families be reunited in this new heaven? And why should not they not only enjoy the old intelligence simply unfolded and dilated? Why indeed? They do, dear friends, only it is past the conception of mortals to understand how very happy and complete these family reunions are. When every link in the thread of the once lost chain has been found and welded together in the old place again, with the spirit soul awake and fully comprehensive, and the eyes and ears of the immortal existence hearing and seeing all of the blessedness of such a reunion, and the wonderful sensibilities of the soul absorbing all of this greatest of privileges, the union is complete. We are so happy here in the peace of family reunions, and in the watching and waiting of those still left to come, and of helping them in their walks of life, that we cannot half express it. For we never tire, we are inspired by the bond of family and of eternal love. With tender blessings I give this little remembrance to my dear son, William Wallace Abba. Occupations in spirit life. Mrs. Jeanette Barry Abba. There exist many exalted and infallible proofs of authority and unadulterated truths of spirit manifestations. And even if these proofs of its origin were taken away, yet there remain all the marks of genuineness of truth that can be brought in support of any other record, or that may be required to authenticate the circumstances of its generation for hundreds, yes, thousands of years hence. Then, whoever can reject these writings as spurious, may with less presumption and more reason, reject any other moral truth. A careful investigation of these manifestations will readily convince you that all of its claims are founded in justice and sustained by the highest reasons. Friends, throw away your preconceived notions. Forget the greed of your fathers. This life, then so high in its aims, so rich in its revenues of happiness and honor, is only preparatory to the higher bliss and glory beyond the grave. It is but the infancy of existence, the bud of being. The flower is to bloom and the fruit to ripen in the purest world above.